Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ross, you've got Dave Lee Travis vibes. Is that his name? How's that right?
Right,
it's
right
the shirt through. And the glasses and the beard and the headphones.
Yeah. I can just counsel you as being a guest. I mean, Jay, let's do this on our own if you like.
Sauce.
All right, Jay, don't do you, please.
And now, for our more grateful podcast. Welcome, listener. You have come of your own free will to the appointed place. Ross, James, and their companions have ventured beyond the Sceptred Isle to find the hidden, the wicked, and the truly horrific. The film is over. The review begins. It is time to keep your appointment with the General Rich Fireplace Folk in Hell.
Right, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, goblins and ghouls, welcome to the fifth episode of the General Witchfinder spin-off podcast, aka John is busy with a very top-level photography project, and we don't want anyone to forget that, or both of our listeners to forget that we exist. So this is our spin-off podcast, Folk in Hell. I'm James in Bournemouth in Southern England.
And I'm Ross in Dorchester in Southern England.
And I'm Becca, also in Dorchester. Actually in the same house as Ross, and not in a creepy way, because I'm Ross's wife.
Yes, but in a different room. I'll make sure she's in a different room.
At all times. At all times.
Possible. Yeah. And in this episode, in Folk in Hell, we are covering In the Earth.
He told me his story. These are his memories. Can you feel him now? In the Earth.
No, I don't know what you mean.
I think you do.
So what are you working on?
Searching ways of making crops more efficient.
Funny place to study crops in a forest.
We had to send a rescue party in to get a group out a couple of months ago. They got lost.
Why didn't they use GPRS?
There's no phone reception in there. People get a bit funny in the woods sometimes.
You're worried she's gonna get you?
Yeah, who is it?
It's a local folk tale. She's the spirit of the woods. Wake up. Something's there. Listen. Someone's watching us. I saw something in the woods.
He wants to talk. Everything seems to just keep us here.
Okay, so after his involvement in the reboot of the Tomb Raider movie franchise was scuppered by the 2020 pandemic, Ben Wheatley, director of Kill List, Sightseers, A Field in England, and High Rise, announced in September 2020 that he had written and directed a horror film over the course of 15 days that August. This became In the Earth, a science fiction horror film starring Joel Fry, Reese Shearsmith, Hayley Squires, Elora Tortia, Joel Hollingworth, and Mark Manera. Peter Bradshaw of The Guardian gave the film a score of 4 out of 5 stars, writing that it brings us back to Wheatley's classic world of occult loopy weirdness and cult Brit movie seediness with a new topical dimension of pandemic paranoia. Now, the research station in the film is called ATU-327A. This is derived from the Arne Thompson Uther Index, the ATU Index, a catalogue of folktale types used in folklore. Index hashtag ATU-327A is called The Children and the Witch, which is the story of Hansel and Gretel is classified as. The ATU listing reads as The Parents Abandoned Their Children in the Woods, The Gingerbread House, The Boy Fattened, The Witch Thrown into the Oven, The Children Acquire Her Treasure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that's all of Ross's notes.
So we know, as with all of these sort of newer films, people haven't written extensive Wikipedia articles over like the 30, 40 years. So I think this is probably the newest film we've done so far.
Yeah.
So not much to be said about on there, but hopefully we can come to it. So I've been meaning to watch this for a long time. It's been quite hard to get hold of.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was only available on Sky for a while. Mm. And I think only recently in the last few weeks or so, because I keep checking of it, that it was available to buy for us to watch. It was only a couple of quid.
Yes.
So I've been really looking forward to watching this ever since. But you saw it at the cinema, James, I believe.
I did, and that's what I thought was interesting. Without letting too much daylight in on magic, as always on this, I know Ross and Becca maybe have struggled to get through this all in one sitting before, and I think that may give us different outlooks as regards to the experience of it, because I saw it in the cinema. And I felt it was very much a cinema experience film, especially like the last 15, 20 minutes, the light and sound effects. Watching that in the cinema was really good and really kind of like, ooh, trippy, otherworldly, et cetera, end of 2001 A Space Odyssey style vibes. But I thought if I was just watching this in the comfort of my lounge with all the lights on and with just like a sound bar for sound rather than surround sound in the cinema, it might have been a very different experience.
Yeah. So, Beck, had you heard of this film prior to me making you watch it?
No, I hadn't.
So, you've seen some Ben Wheatley films. So, you've seen Kill... So, this is where we go. This often happens. I would say to Beck, she's seen a film and she would deny it. You've seen Kill List. Remember that one?
For purposes of the tape, I'm thinking... I don't recognise the name, but it doesn't mean I've not seen it.
Okay, so spoilers for anyone not watching Kill List. Ban is—he's like a hitman, isn't he, James?
Yes.
And then he realizes he's actually
being set up.
Yeah, being set up to kill all these people in order to fulfill some kind of prophecy, because he's going to be some kind of like second coming or something. Remember that?
I do not, and I'm muddling it in my mind also with, I think it might be 2008 classic Wanted. I still could have seen it, but I just don't recognize it. I'm really sorry.
So why is that getting you mixed up with Wanted?
In that film, he is the son of a supervillain, isn't he?
Like a super assassin, I think it is.
Inherit
it's
the
his
mantle
destiny, yeah. And then he kind of blows shit up, as it were, doesn't he? Decides it's not going to do it. Or something along those lines. I have seen that film many times and I still can't, I haven't really grasped the the plot, which sort of bodes well, really, being on a film podcast. I can't remember. Don't know what's going on.
You've seen Sightseers?
Yes, I definitely remember seeing Sightseers.
That's good.
Yeah.
I haven't seen
Free Fire. That's, is that good?
Free Fire's really good. Free Fire's absolutely fantastic.
We've seen High Rise. I think we turned it off, though.
No, we did get through it, but it wasn't what we thought it was going to be like. I think we were quite excited to watch it, weren't we? Yeah. It wasn't bad. Like, I've seen worse films.
Yeah. And we went and saw Deep Breath, he's done two Doctor Who episodes. He's done Deep Breath, which is the first Peter Capaldi episode. We went and saw that at the cinema. Do you remember that, Beck?
I'm really sorry. I don't. I remember going to see, is it The Day of the Doctor?
The Doctor.
We didn't see that at the cinema, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, nearly 10 years ago. It'd be 10 years ago this November.
And weirdly enough, he's now directing the sequel to The Meg.
Yeah.
Isn't he? Oh.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Yep. It's so amazing.
Such a strange, sort of like a trajectory for a career. We saw the remake of Rebecca as well, which wasn't great.
Well, you say it's a strange trajectory, Ross. But I was thinking this the other day. Is that like I think you will get this more and more in the how films are now funded, etc., and the fact that there's no sort of mid-level films anymore. The whole idea of like what we grew up with as teenagers, the idea of you would have a big blockbuster movie and blockbuster movie season in the summer and winter and things like that. But then at other times of the year, you would have smaller films that, you know, maybe for a more niche audience, but made on a cheaper budget, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, for a lot of directors, they would do one for the studios and then one for themselves as well. And that model seems to have gone. But it does seem to be that whole thing of, well, you work for hire and then you can maybe get one of your projects off the ground and running. And I think with this, I imagine they've come to him and said, will you do this for us? And he's thought, or in negotiation, he and Amy Jump, his wife and sort of creative partner, have probably said, well, we'll do The Meg if this means that we'll get a crack at.
They could probably make another two or three independent films off the back of that. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. And if that was you, like, that's a straight up awesome deal to make, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's make a mental film.
It'd be really fun, I reckon.
Like The Meg 2, or whatever they're calling it. Yeah, I'll make that in order to be able to make films I want to make. Absolutely. Yeah.
Monster Meg.
Also, that's quite scary. The thought of that is quite scary, The Meg. I have seen it, but only like I've seen it whilst also doing like screen tapas. You know, when you watch a film, but you're also on your laptop and you're on your phone.
Yeah.
Nice. So,
and doing the online shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Mm. But the trailer for that second one features the eponymous Meg eating a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Of course it does.
In a sort of like up yours to like the Jurassic Park, like it's on the beach at the start. Chasing other dinosaurs, and then boom, he comes out of the surf and just eats the T-Rex.
Oh, nice.
But just right, Jason Statham's going to punch him in the nose and tell him to piss off. I think it was the plot of the other film.
I don't think I will ever watch The Meg.
No. I'm sure he won't mind us saying his name, but you know, Andy, who runs our local comic shop, who you've met, he's a huge fan of Jason Statham. Huge.
Okay.
And just every time he's just like, oh, the Stath. Oh, amazing, amazing. And he was very excited about The Meg, and he was very excited that there's a Meg too.
I don't think I've seen a Jason Statham film.
I don't think I've seen a Jason Statham fan. And I'm quite impressed that you've like sourced one out in the wild. Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, look, I get that they're out there. I've heard tell. But yeah, that's quite.
Isn't there one where something's going on with his heart and he has to keep getting like excited in order
crank?
Yeah,
the crank movies.
Oh come on! It can't be that. That's amazing.
Yeah, he has to keep like deflibrating himself and stuff.
Oh god,
does
he?
Yeah.
To be fair, I felt like that at work. So,
and also to be fair, they're the sort of films which we as teenage boys would have been very excited to watch on a sleepover. Yeah, let's go to a petrol station and buy like 10 bags of Haribo.
Yeah.
Should we try and contact girls? No, let's watch a really bad action film till 3 in the morning. So you know, I can try and be all classy. I wouldn't watch a film like that. We used to love things like that.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And look, no shade to Statham. I do not have great taste in many things, films. Husbands. I watch all sorts of things. Yeah. But yeah, I love all kinds of films. I'm not honestly not knocking Jason Statham. Yeah. But again, I've genuinely not met anyone ever that's been like, God, I love him. I would quite like to discuss this with Andy.
Well, head to Paradox Comics in Poole. Yeah. Where you'll find the proprietor and he'll fulfill all your Statham questions. Almost said Statham needs, but that would be very bad job. I managed to stop myself in time.
Right, so let's go for the... but I find with these newer films... Mm-hmm. There's often hardly any plot to go through.
Yes.
And because I was thinking the other day, I was just thinking about one of the Hammer films. I was thinking, so much happens in those. It was like, then they go there, and then they do this, and then they do that, and then this happens. Where it's like, one of them is that they go to a house, and they have a fight, and then they leave, and that's the end. You know, it's just, it's so... Such a lower sort of level of plot in films now, isn't there?
There is that, but there's also that realization of, well, what do you want to be able to do in the time? Because once again, same with Free Fire, which again, highly recommend Free Fire. It's great. They're both really short films. Mm. Same with this. This is, 110 minutes?
Oh, no. It was 148. It was because I was thinking, I'm not going to... It's longer than I thought.
Is it longer than 1 hour and 48?
Yeah, that's all right.
Hold on.
IMDb.
Because that would make it like 110 minutes, wouldn't it?
No. I'm not very good at maths. I completely messed up picking my daughter up yesterday because I thought, I've only got 25 minutes or 1 hour and 25 minutes.
We were both guilty of that, Ross.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I hope child... I've just typed in IMDb into IMDb. What am I doing?
Oh, it's a classic, Ross. This is like... I know when that's happened before, my
friend. Googled.
Well, tell them what I Googled the other day.
I looked over Ross's shoulder, this was a while back now, to see he had Googled webuyanycar.com. I wonder what the web address is for that. Fucking hell, Cleves. I was like, and he just turned and sort of looked at me, and I was like, yeah, I saw that.
That's amazing. Oh, dear. Good job. Well done. Anyway, how long is it, Ross?
Oh, God. IMDb, it's harder to find stuff on it nowadays. So, like, I think it... 1 hour, 47 minutes.
I just said 1 hour, 48. She did. Yeah, and that is 110 minutes, isn't it? Just to shy off.
No, it's 1 hour, 47 minutes.
Yeah, which is 110 minutes, isn't it? All in one go.
60.
Isn't it? 90 minutes is an hour and a half. 100 minutes would be 1 hour 40. 110 would be... Okay. So you're both right, basically.
So welcome to the the mass cast. We have a senior school teacher here.
I have told my students this. Once again, we will get onto this film in due course, people, but... I have told them, all of my students, proudly, that one of the greatest moments in my life was that in this country for a while, you had to do a thing where even if you had GCSE maths and English and all the rest of it, you still had to do like online tests to prove your proficiency in them. Mm. And when it came to the maths one, I was sweating. I've never been so... It was the most stressed I think I've been in the last 25 years. And passing, because you've got like 30 seconds to answer each question and a bit of paper and a pencil to work it all out. Mm. And then you just like hit enter at the end and it calculates your result. And when it said, you have passed, I remember like punching the air going, maths! I say that because I'm such a dreadful, dreadful mathematician. Yeah. Dreadful.
I can build really, really complicated spreadsheets and do loads of really cool stuff, but...
With
basic maths. Yeah,
but the actual...
Sorry about that, Ingleves.
Yeah, well, you know...
They are very good.
They are. I built back many a spreadsheet. Yeah. But the very, very basic maths, it's just... My brain doesn't work like that.
Anyway. What happens in this film? Okay, yes. So that... Once again, it's quite prescient, isn't it? Because as we've said in the preamble, he wrote this during lockdown and obviously like a bit of a creative burst in lockdown when he was due to be the director of the second rebooted Tomb Raider film. Mm. And then that didn't happen. And then obviously he wrote this in like a burst of creativity. And even though it's not named that it's not supposed to be like the COVID pandemic, there has been another pandemic that's happened.
Mm-hmm. It was really interesting because... I was talking to someone else about this the other day, that when we were in the pandemic, it was all encompassing. It was like,
yeah,
it's every part of our life, everything we was looking on the news about. Ooh. It was
everything stopped.
Yeah. But it feels to me like it's almost like a dream now.
Yeah.
It's almost like, because there's a bit in this film when she said, one of the characters says, at some point we'll all go back to normal and people will just go back to their lives and forget about this. And he says, one of the other characters says, I don't think anyone will ever forget this. And I was thinking, well, I would probably have felt the same way. But now I'm like, sometimes it's like, oh yeah, that did happen.
That did happen. Yeah, absolutely.
You still see the lines on the floor and places. You think, oh yeah, like, this kind
of. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, like if you know someone that obviously suffered through COVID, and as, again, I know a couple of people who lost people during COVID, and I'm sure for them, of course. But oh yeah, true. Yeah, unfortunately it happens, doesn't it? But for the rest of us who didn't, we weren't particularly affected about it, it does start to have that weird kind of, oh yeah, quality.
Yeah, yeah. It's just strange, isn't it? Because I think you had some colleagues, you lost a colleague or two, didn't you, Beck?
Yeah, lost a colleague really early on.
Yeah.
It was, it was really shocking. But even now, like doing like things with work, we do sort of business plans for people coming in to kind of buy businesses. And when we get them to do pest and SWOT analysis, one of the big things that we want them to talk about is the impact that COVID's had on the marketplace, which is obviously huge. But the amount of people that don't mention it at all, and you're really prompting them, like, has anything else happened globally that might have impacted? And they're like, and it's just like, oh God, come on. But yeah, it's sort of sliding from people's consciousness, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. And I remember, like, in the midst of it all, like, people going, oh, well, you know, the last time this kind of happened, the influenza pandemic, you know, the 1920s, millions of people died and all the rest of it. And I remember reading a few articles saying, oh, let's look back at history to see, you know, how did they deal with it at the time? And then those articles saying, oh, it's quite incredible how, you know, after this huge influenza pandemic, you know, the world kind of got back up on its feet. And despite, you know, millions more people that we lost this time out, things do just then sort of get back to normal. And that's, you know, one of the things that the resilience is of humans, isn't it? We do just kind of find a way to get up and get on with it the next day.
Yeah, so reading something about the Second World War, and they were just saying when people came back, they just had to get on with life.
Get on with it.
Yeah, and you just think, how would you ever get over that? But then this is the closest we're of, hopefully.
Hopefully, fingers crossed. Yeah, yeah,
kind of thing like that, all encompassed in our life. But yeah, but it was interesting watching a film which has been made during that time. And and like you said, they kind of made out it's something similar, but they sort of like, there's little hits, like it feels like something's happened to Bristol and things like
that. Yeah, that's where he's from. That's where our protagonist is from. It starts off in Bristol, doesn't it? And that's what Ben Wheatley used. He managed to use the fact that lockdown restrictions were in place, so we do get those kind of haunting shots of deserted streets, dead, you know, kind of dead-ish towns and all the rest of it. And we learn that he is heading out into this kind of woodland area outside of Bristol.
Yes. What's the name of the protagonist? So,
okay.
We're going to keep
Martin.
Saying
our
usual, Martin.
Yeah, our usual professional way of the bloke. Him, you know, that guy.
Martin, the man out of plebs.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's him. So he is, we're told that it's his former partner.
Well, he doesn't
remember.
They don't reveal that it's his former partner because he's just saying it's someone he previously worked with.
Yes.
It's another sort of scientist. He needs to take some equipment to or something out into the woods. Is that correct, Beck? You pay more attention than I was.
They don't acknowledge it. Well, we don't find out it's his kind of ex-romantic partner until much later on, do we?
Well, I did find the second time watching it because, as James alluded to, me and Beck both watched this and fell asleep at different points during it.
Not because it was bad, though, right?
No.
Not because it was bad at all.
Both had a long
week. As soon as I sit on the sofa these days, I'm just fall asleep.
Yeah.
Yes.
The second time he was watching it, it is more obvious that because there's a bit, you see him like reading letters, and there's a bit where he's looking at a picture of a woman, but you don't see what the woman's face looks like. But then they're saying, and this is interesting because they're saying that you need to have a guide to go into these woods. And they're talking about this is like, it's a hostile environment. People have gone in there and gone missing before, and he said, "This is not this. If this was in America or parts of Europe, like in the film Ritual, which we followed, I would say, well, that's a realistic sort of threat. But the idea of getting lost in a wood in the UK, it does feel a little bit incredulous.
I do know what you're saying, and I think there were a few criticisms of the film at the time saying, you know, it doesn't actually feel that wild, in inverted commas. Mm. But bearing in mind, you know, we live quite close to the New Forest. You could get lost in the New Forest.
Yeah.
Totally you could. I think there are a number of things that sort of came to mind during that whole sequence for me. Mm. So first of all, can we do a big shout out to the checkpoint that wouldn't have stopped any human or vehicle? I love that because, you know, it stretched across a path with just flat ground either side.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, this is pointless, but okay, fine. Also, I would have asked so many more questions if that had been me. Like when you're saying, oh, normally this is full of people, this place. Like, what is it? Like, is this a guest house? Because it looks like shit from the outside, but inside it was quite fancy.
Yeah, they said
it was a hotel.
Yeah, they said it was some kind of like lodge for tourists or something, wasn't
it? Yeah, but not enough detail. So I'd have wanted to know, like, what is this? I'd have asked more questions. And again, him and Alma, the kind of one of the main female leads, have a conversation, and he talks about the guide, another person at school, his school with the same name, and then he goes, oh, he hated me. Nobody says, well, what? Why? Tell me about that, because you've just brought it up. I'd like to know. And then, it's a hostile environment. Sorry, what do you mean? Because as you said there, it's woods. So what do you mean by it's a hostile environment? Like, hang on a second. I'd want to know, why? And also lastly, nobody sends a letter with a passport photo with them anymore, do they?
No.
Fucking hell. That's true. It was a passport photo, wasn't it? I was like, what's happening here?
But Martin does say to himself, doesn't look hostile to me under his breath.
Goes, okay. But under his breath.
And then we had... So, I did like this film, but it did have quite a few sort of clumsy exposition dumps. And there's a point where you go, look at this poster on the wall, and then they give you a massive sort of information dump about a legend of the woods,
Parnag Feg.
Yes, which is a cool name.
Yeah,
but it was it's a cool poster done by Richard Wells, who's one of our favourite graphic designers. Stroke printmakers. I believe he was a graphic designer on some of Doctor Who, he's done the Dracula print and the Black Phillip print, which is hanging up in our toilet.
Oh, lovely.
So we were desperately trying to see if we could get that poster featured in this film, but no longer available, unfortunately. But yes, Parnag Feg. Does anyone want to talk about what the legend was?
Well, we come on to it later on, don't we? But in short, and then this is why it's so folk horror-y and what have you, we're told that there was sort of like a warlock / wizard who was sort of driven into the woods by the fearful local people, and he somehow transmuted his very essence, into sort of like the living rocks and like the rocks and stones. Oh. So that whole standing stones vibes.
See, I've watched this film twice, didn't get that on either pass. Thank you for that. That makes
no problem.
Quite a lot of sense now.
So that's what they kind of establish, is that a la the Blair Witch Project, which is what this is pretty similar to, really, in many ways. And you know, by both films just encourage my absolute hatred of camping, which is what I thought we'd probably end up talking about at some point, and just being intense at any point. And also, I'm hoping that in a minute it will give me the opportunity to tell you guys and everybody else the story of the time when one of my colleagues went, "What do you mean you don't own a sleeping bag?" And I just went, "I don't own a sleeping bag." Anyway, we'll come on to that in the fullness of time. But yes, so that's what's kind of set up, isn't it? Is that there's a spirit in the woods or potentially a spirit in the woods. And that is then going to be tied into, going back to her name, Olivia, the woman that Martin has come to find. That's going to have something to do with her research as well. So so you can kind of half figure out, okay, I see where this is going.
Yeah.
And then, so they head out into the woods to try and find her. And then, first of all, they find the abandoned tent.
Yes, which is quite nice. So they say Beck spotted the bit of rubbish. Is that a Kinder
Bueno wrapper?
Kinder Bueno wrapper, yeah.
my expert eye tells me.
Yeah, so that apparently...
Which would make sense if there was a kid at the campsite. And if that's what that was, then I really appreciate that extra bit of detail. Mm.
Yeah. So the fact that people have been fleeing the cities to go and live wild in the woods, and they said that they've seen this happen before, but they find an abandoned tent, so the people aren't there. And they kind of... It's interesting that they kind of sort of like... want to talk around it. They don't want to sort of confront what might have actually happened to these people.
Yeah.
So it also made me think a bit of The Stand. Stephen King's... I never watched any of the adaptations of it, but I read the book. I think I read that around lockdown myself as well, but the way that people were fleeing away from the main sort of areas but still going off and then dying.
It was a nice touch with the it being a witch book.
Oh yes, I saw that.
The kids book. I thought that was they found a kids book. Cool. Yeah.
And then I said they in the night while they get assaulted.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Martin's shoes are stolen from him.
Well, both of their shoes are stolen, aren't they? Yeah.
Yes. That's so, leaving them barefoot, and you know, and they have their supplies.
Quite a nice.
I would just like to point out that when they are pummeled in the tent at night, it was exactly the feeling of when you are in our separate toilet. We've got like a bathroom with a toilet in and a separate toilet. And my arsehole of a husband suddenly, without warning, really rattles the door. Rattles the doorknob. Rattles the door. It makes you almost pass out from fear. It is horrible. And you have to go, go away, go away. And it's horrible. He does it to me, does it to the kids. It is, that is what it's like. It's horrible. It's such a small space. It's making such a big noise.
Yeah, and they're vulnerable. Yeah, it's good.
It's just so. It's ideal. Ross.
But that is my, because we go camping a lot, and I do enjoy it, but there will be that point, and it's not so much in the big tent we got now, but when we had a smaller tent, the idea that there could be someone just the other side of that canvas, and you wouldn't know it, and that they could easily just, like, a knife could come through,
totally. That, I mean, it is. You are very vulnerable.
Because you've got no windows, have you? You're just inside this thing, and they could be like... But I remember when I was in Fiji in a hut, and I got some kind of like weird like food poisoning, and I started like hallucinating all these old people. And then... and I knew there were people outside the hut, and that was making it worse, because there was people like... walking around, and that was making my hallucinations like even worse. Of the fact that I know behind that wall there's people, but I don't know who they are and what they're doing.
Yeah. So, well, when he woke up, you know, when he wakes up like face down, you know, in his camping stuff, I did think, oh, do you know what? I think I did that when I was about 18 or 19, a fair few times.
What?
Waking up with stuff everywhere, no shoes on. You're like, ah. Oh,
yeah. I went out for a night out with James and woke up face down in Pool Park once. But yeah.
In the day.
That night was the closest I've ever come to being arrested in my life.
Really?
Really?
Yes. Yes. Ross and I both got absolutely wazzocks. For reasons that we just got really drunk. We started really early. We're both drinking on an empty stomach, as I seem to recall. And we were drinking like Hoegaarden, which is like that white wheat beer.
I love Hoegaarden. Which is yum.
Right? It's delicious, isn't it? But on an empty stomach, and in those ginormous glasses they serve it in.
Yeah.
Right. So by the end of the evening, we were both just really drunk. And we were in a venue. No, don't look for it. It's not there anymore.
It's not a church.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, okay. It's church.
No, we ended up going to what used to be Gray's.
We didn't. No. That was a different night.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay.
Yeah. This was the night when we were both on Pool Quay.
Right.
And we got so drunk. Well, we got separated towards the end of the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so drunk, I thought, I just need to have a little lie down for a minute. And there are a number of benches and seating areas along Pool Quay. And I just lay there. And then the next thing I know, two officers of the law came up and said, if you can't get up and take yourself home, we're going to have to arrest you. And that sobered me up massively, and I pegged it home, expecting to find Ross back there, only to find that he just hadn't materialised.
I was face down in the park.
And then he turned up the next morning. Yeah. I was like, what happened to you? And he said, I got lost.
No, I went and I went and sat with a tramp on a bench watching the sunrise, and him telling me about his wife. who left him.
See, I've never heard the other side to that story.
Oh!
And that is wonderful. That is a real... That makes it whole, that story. We only had the legend of the ending.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just the fact that I there was a knock on the door. And I was like, what are you doing? Is there anyone? Although, yeah, Ross and I went through a phase of like looking shambolic the following day, didn't we? Like when I came down to you guys in Weymouth, I think I stumbled home that one time, having been again horribly sick.
Was anyway. That while stressed as a vampire?
Yes, it was, Ross.
Yeah.
as a flamboyant Reformation. Restoration era vampire, no less.
Yeah, we kept finding bits of his wig in our kitchen for years.
I just look like Brian May.
That was an excellent costume.
With one fang, his teeth had flopped out of his mouth at one point, it exploded.
I don't remember. Hang on, though. Which one was that? Was that was the one where Halloween party?
No,
that?
It's another one.
It was the second one. And that was the one where Ross was dressed as... That was the Bubba Hotep incident.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the bad one.
And Ross looks amazing. But because of his teeth, his mouth couldn't move. And I just remember loads of people going, Ross, who are you? Because they hadn't seen the movie Bubba Hotep. And Ross goes, oh, hard crap. What? Bubba Hotep. What? And on this went for a good few minutes. It was brilliant.
And Beck was the shortest Michael Myers. Yeah.
It was.
Hey!
Yeah.
Great fun.
Midget anyway. Michael.
Yes. So back to the film.
Oh, we should say that he just before they were assaulted in the tent, they mentioned a couple of times that he's got ringworm and he doesn't know where he's picked up. And they talk about ringworm being a fungal infection.
Yes, yeah, and so he's got like a rash on his arm. Yeah, all of that, mm-hmm. Yes. So that plays into it. So yeah, they then have to sort of make their way onwards sans shoes, mm-hmm. which again, you know, absolute nightmare and what have you. And at which point they then encounter Reese Shearsmith.
Oh, this is just before they encounter Reese Shearsmith. He's ripped open the bottom of his foot.
Yes.
And
yes.
Right at the beginning, pre-credits, you see someone smashing up flint and burying them into the ground.
Yes. Making a trap. You?
Yeah.
Totally.
Yep. Yes.
I thought he had a really mild reaction to what was really quite a disabling injury.
Yeah.
Yes. It was just like, oh, just psych sharp. And it was just like, your foot is lacerated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't believe I would have been rolling around, howling if that had been me.
I stood on a staple once and in the swimming pool at Pool High and made such a fuss.
How was there a staple in there?
I don't know. And then the teacher had to pull it out of my foot. And it was, I was making such a fuss. They got everyone out at the pool because I was making such a noise.
I was at school with him back around. This is the first I've ever heard of this story.
Oh my God, and I wonder why Rowan is the way she is. Dear. Right, okay. Mind you, that is mental.
But yeah.
That is like some Hellraiser shit right there. Yeah. Stepping on a staple in a swimming pool. Gross. So gross.
But then we see everyone's favourite, Reese Shearsmith.
Can we just address Reese Shearsmith's walk?
Yeah.
It's a bit Liam Gallagher, isn't it?
Yeah, you can tell.
I feel like you know who it was.
Yeah, you can tell him by his walk easily. Yeah.
Totally.
But I was thinking, oh, he's being really restrained. Like, he's not doing any of his normal sort of like, over the top voices and all this kind of stuff. But it's because later on he's just going to go completely over the top later
on. I thought this was one of the best things I've seen him in, because he does do that thing where, to start off with, it's like, why is he just out here on his own? And you just think, this is weird.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he plays it, or I felt that he played it really nicely, that you start to think, okay, well, maybe he is all right.
Mm.
Or maybe he does want to help them.
Yeah.
He takes them back to his camp.
Yeah.
Where he's like, guys, yeah, you know, let me look after you.
Yeah.
He basically drugs them.
Yeah. But if you ever go to someone's massive homemade sort of bivouac type thing, and they say, they go, don't go in that room. You're like, right, I'm leaving now.
Yeah. That's where the bodies are.
Yeah.
That's where the bodies are. Second sign would be the fact that he's clearly been wearing white old school vests, which he had hanging up drying. Come on now. So no, that would have been a sign to run the other way for sure.
Yeah. And then he feeds him all his home foraged food and drinks and stuff. But yeah, you're gonna get
does he do that, or do they sew his foot up first?
Because
that is, I've just written so skanky in my notes. That was so gross, that scene.
First of many, first of several sort of operations done on this man's feet with no anaesthetic.
Anaesthetic.
But that's one of the things that why the film worked for me, because it wasn't that kind of slasher-esque horror film where the wounds are so horrendous and you're not being disemboweled or anything like that. It was something that you could immediately empathise with.
Oh,
and that notion
just...
of someone going, well, I'm sorry, you're going to have to just bite down really hard on this bit. Oh, geez, you know, my palms are sweating just thinking about it.
Yeah, thought, and he acts it really well, didn't he? Yeah. I was really watching him the second time round, and I was like, he's really bringing that to life, because you could really feel it. And then like at the end, where he's like, how does it look? And she's like, yeah, it looks all right. I'm like, this doesn't look all right. He's not done a very good job, actually. He's not even lined it up.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, yes,
plus when you bet that tent stinks, FYI.
Yeah.
Fucking stinks, just saying.
So when they wake up, we find out that while they're unconscious, Zach has taken, and this is when it really starts to get creepy and very kill listy. He has posed them while they're unconscious and taken really weird pictures.
Brilliant photographs.
Yes.
I said to Beck, I would love to have these photographs like up in our house. These are so it made me think of Manhunter. Do you remember?
Yes.
With I'm talking about the original one, not Red Dragon. With Francis Dolarhyde, he kills the family, then he poses them all, and he puts mirrors over their eyes. And I think they're doing something similar in this as well. So when they take photographs of them, their eyes look like they're glowing. Mm. But what was the added extra creepiness is that he's not doing it with dead bodies; he's doing it with unconscious bodies, and he's going into the pictures with himself as well, doing all these poses, and it's. It made me think a bit of BTK. He used to pose all of the bodies and also tie himself up and take pictures of himself as well. And that kind
who is,
of
who is BTK, Ross? I'm sorry for people that aren't obsessed with serial killers.
Bind, torture, kill.
Okay.
That he was a serial killer. I can't remember what his real name is. Do you know remember what his real name is, Beck? Because you had a book with his daughter, didn't you?
I know. I mean, I have. His daughter's called Kerry, but I can't remember what the name is.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But it's, really creepy, but also really quite, because he puts them all like, sort of like homemade robes, but they look like they're made out of old feed sacks and stuff. And they got like crowns made of twigs and things like that.
Again, so that kind of made me feel of the end of Kill List.
Yeah. Yeah.
The masks that people were wearing at the end of Kill List and that vibe. And also, it reminded me of, have you seen A Field in England?
Yes. Another film I've never stayed a week all the way through. But
And again, it's a similar thing of like when they do those like intermission scenes or kind of scene setting cards where they're all posed as if they are pictures from the 1600s, aren't they?
So yeah, like a painting or something. Yeah.
Yes. So again, it kind of put me in mind of all of that. And at the time, I was like, this is good.
But just idea of people taking pictures of you while you're asleep is creepy enough, let alone them drugging you and then posing you. Imagine finding pictures of you in like a completely, vulnerable state, and that someone is taking advantage of you. It's just so creepy.
The foot surgery kind of scene, all of these things are, it's not beyond the realms of possibility in inverted commas, but these are all things which you can easily go, I can see that. As you said, that's a creepy idea. Someone taking pictures of you while you're asleep, having to undergo, a brutal surgery without anesthetic and being out in the middle of nowhere and someone attacking you in a tent. all of those are things which you're like, that's well within the realms of possibility. You know, that could happen. Completely. You could experience that. And all of them are creepy and horrific. Yeah. So that's why, for me, this film works.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, definitely. Whoa.
And Reese Witherspoon is great at being someone who's like...
Unhinged,
yeah.
Totally. He's unhinged and he delivers that really... Because I think one of the scariest bits for me of this is when he delivers the sort of reasoning behind what he's doing. Mm. And he really, and you can tell he really believes it. That's scary enough, isn't it? If you were sat there tied to a chair and someone's telling you that and they really believe it, you'd think, oh, yeah, we're fucked. We are totally fucked. He is going to kill us because he really believes what he's saying.
So he keeps talking about him and he. So I imagine it's like our listeners to our podcast thinking, who the fuck
which character?
Who's he? Who's him? Because is he talking about Penny Fegg or whatever his name
is?
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
That's what I thought it was.
So he, Reese's character is saying, what's his name? Gus? Guy?
Ben? Gus Honeybuns?
No.
Who?
What's
Zach.
The name? Zach.
Zach.
Yeah. Zach. The character Gus Zach guy. Is saying Zach. That I'm what he wants. What Penny Fegg or whatever he's called wants is a tributes, and he wants arch made for him.
Yes,
And it's just similar, you know. You think, well, that's weird, but you think like, how Christians are we making art for God for like thousands of years and stuff?
Completely, and the fact that he's like, she thinks she's at this way, but I know actually that's what he wants. And that's the same thing with religions, isn't it? You don't know, but I know. I know what needs to be done with this. And he says at one point, he says that like, your world is sleeping and ritual, which he clearly thinks is like a massive diss, although frankly, I think that sounds great. I'll tell you what it's not. It's not living in a dingy tarp tent drinking forage soup, is it?
And wearing a vest.
Exactly. So who's winning now? Fucking hell.
So following this, they then manage to escape. They managed to escape from Zach, Reese Shearsmith. And while Reese Shearsmith is pursuing our protagonist, Martin, he stumbles across the dead, but you know, the bodies of what I assume to be the bodies of the family.
Yeah. And well, he did say some point, and this is interesting. He said, he's been sending lots of people to me.
Yes.
Yeah. They're coming here and then I'm doing this. And there's this kind of, it's implied that people are being drawn to this place, and that's what they're talking about. Maybe this fungus he's got on his arm is part of the scientists are trying to find that. They reveal at one point that she's doing investigations into the way that fungus sort of ties all these trees and plants all together and helps them communicate with each other.
Yes.
And I've got a book about that, which I haven't read, but it is an actual scientific thing. Right. Okay. But it's on the shelf.
Ross, are you sure this isn't an actual scientific thing? Like you were like when you told me and John that they developed a machine that can read people's dreams.
They think they can. I said,
they can't. We've talked about this.
I forgot where I was going with this now.
Anyway, sorry. Yeah, that's why people are being drawn to
are being drawn there. And it made me think, have you seen... Knock at the Cabin, is that what it's called?
No.
Is that what it's called? It's based on the Cabin in the Woods. The new M. Night Shyamalan film, which we have seen, Beck, remember?
I do remember this. Yeah.
And do you remember that they were all drawn to that place?
Yes.
Yes, and it felt a similar kind of feeling to that they didn't know that they needed to come here, but this was bringing them here. And I quite like that idea, and I thought that would have been quite nice to sort of... dig into that a little bit further. But Reese is going to say he gets smacked over the head with a photographic enlarging thing. So he's got a flap of skin on his head.
Who is doing the wounds on this film?
Yeah.
That forehead flap. come on.
We should also say one of the other things which they was happening while they were drugged was Reese was, or Zach was, cutting flaps of skin off the arms of the guy and inserting things under his skin and sewing it up with animal gut.
Yeah.
And also carving like runes into him as well, which is again fucking
creepy but effective.
People putting stuff into your body and you don't know what it is.
So we should also get having escapes or having Martin manages to escape from Zach Reese's man, and then he is rescued by the woman they've been looking for, Olivia,
which is a great bit where because she's wearing a hazmat suit, and before she will help him escape, she shoves a big cotton bud thing up his nose, because before she would take him into his camp, she's got to check that he hasn't been affected by the pandemic as well.
Yep.
And I love that, like, kind of like, there's still this mad rush, but I still need to check you before you come in. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And that feels true to life, doesn't it? Mm. Yeah, it feels true to life that you would be swabbed. Someone will quickly do something to you before you're able to move.
That's quite nice. People keep doing this little squirty thing as well, disinfecting things. But if anyone comes into a building or a tent, they get squirted with a little of disinfectant. Yeah. Oh, I'm glad we don't have to stick things up our nose and down our throat every 5 minutes. I had to do a COVID.
Speak for yourself. Yeah, a lot of requests on OnlyFans, but yeah.
But
I'm not on OnlyFans, by the way, just in case anybody who knows me ever listens to this. I did think the actress that played Dr. Wendell, and I didn't know her name was Olivia, so thank you for that. So she was great. She was so intense and batshit, and I don't know if that's her real voice that she's using, but she was creepy. She was great, I thought.
Yeah. Apart from, I did feel like we did get another massive exposition dump at this point. But this is where we find out that Martin was having a relationship with her previously, but he didn't. And we also find out that Zach is Dr. Wendell's husband. And
dun, dun, dun.
And she wasn't, and he and Martin wasn't aware she was married, and all this. So it's all confusing love triangle stuff all happening at this point.
But we were told that they were there because they had been following the directions of a centuries-old book on local legends.
Yes.
Nom, 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 nom. That's what we like.
Yeah.
That's good.
Again, illustrated by Richard Wells. So it's like, oh, that's interesting. It's got the same illustrations in this book as the poster he's got up on the wall.
Do you feel, Ross, you fear that something like this could happen to you when you're doing Dark Darset?
Yeah, I'd love it to happen to us. At the moment, all we've had so far is a gate swing out and knock one of us over. That was it. Hi, it's Ross from the General Witchfinders. Did you know that I also do another podcast with my friend David?
Hello. Well, my headphones are full of that. You're not taking this seriously, Ross.
David and I do our own supernatural research and investigations in our home county of Dorset. So, if you think that's up your street, why don't you give it a listen? It's Dark Darset, D-A-R-Z-E-T. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
It's not natural.
Yeah, but what we should say, before they get rescued, Martin finds Dr. Wendell by finding microphones hanging in trees.
Yes.
And then all this, strobe lights are going off, and it's a whoop, 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 whoop.
It goes in the cinema. Amazing.
Yeah, really very Stone Tape. It was like Stone Tape, disco trumpet vibes. Beck, you were saying that, have you heard the music made by mushrooms? And apparently a lot of the music...
It's making me sound mental, but yes. Yeah, there is there's music made by mushrooms. I can't remember how I saw it now. But they create some kind of weird, psychedelic, sort of trippy music.
I will insert that into them. I will insert this into this now.
I thought, you wonder if at some point the director or the writer has come across that and that's influenced it in any way. If not, then he's definitely on the right lines.
Well, apparently a lot of the music in this film was made by plants, so they must have done a similar type of thing.
They've 100% got that then. But it's really intense and weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But music of the spheres and all of that business. Yeah.
Music of the spores, mate. Yeah.
Yes, but then we find out that the puffball mushroom has been putting all these fungi spores up into the air, and which has caused like a barrier around the base. Mm. And they try, Martin and the guy try and walk through it, and then they end up having some kind of
psychedelic freak out.
Yeah, psychedelic freak out, which is the first time you get this sort of bang, this sort of banging noise, and all these sort of symbols. Mm. come up, and but so they get pulled out of that, and they realize they can't get out. So it's like the Earth is trying to keep them where they are, and the scientist is trying to, by using sound and music and light and the rituals in this book, trying to talk to the Earth, saying that it's calling, it's talking to us, but we can't hear it, and it's obviously got a message to us, and we've got to try and work out what that message is.
I thought they were trying to contact Parnag Feg.
All right, see,
that was the whole thing, is that you know, it's Parnag Feg that they're trying to bring from the stone.
My understanding was that
he was become one with the Earth.
Zach thinks it's Parnag Feg, whereas I think that Olivia thinks it's the Earth itself.
Fair enough, yeah.
So that's my understanding of it, anyway.
Yeah, that kind of... Yeah, both of those things kind of make sense.
Mm.
I did not have any concept of what was happening.
But again,
with that,
Olivia's like, don't go in that room. That's my... don't go to that part of my tent. It's like, okay, right.
And wouldn't your mind immediately be like, special wank room?
Yeah.
You would be like, oh yeah, all right then, fine. No, I definitely don't want to go in there, to be fair.
My mind would be like, I've just been in another tent where someone said to me, don't go into, go into that room. And then they ended up drugging me and trying to kill me. So this red warning lights are going off at this point. So I think this is, to me, where I kind of lost the plot a little bit, because for some reason, Martin then agrees to drink a load of magic mushrooms and go and stand by this this standing stone.
Yes,
but they do try and escape. They put the house mat suit on and try and send someone through. They freak out
again. Mm. A really good sequence, and I hadn't actually thought about what that would be like in the cinema, because even watching it on telly, I'd made a note of that's a really it was a really effective sequence in terms of what that might feel like, very sort of drug induced. So I thought it was excellent. So I would have liked to have seen that in the cinema, definitely.
So Martin takes the magic mushroom milk drink.
That was the only sort of funny bit, did you not think? When he was like, how bad does that look on 1 to 10?
Yeah.
Scale of 1 to 10, how bad? Is it a 5? And I just thought, that's actually quite funny, where he's trying to convince himself, it doesn't look that bad, Mushroom milk, be fine.
Then Zach turns up, and it turns out that he's in it all along with his wife, who's playing like creepy piano music in a room with all the...
So loudly.
Yeah.
She's playing it so loudly. Imagine having an earpiece and being by that stone. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't hear anything. It's so loud. Fucking MC Mushroom City up there banging out the tunes at bloody maximum volume. Yeah. It was just, you couldn't have had a conversation. I wouldn't be able to follow instructions even if I had drunk the weird milk.
And then...
him turning up made me shit myself both times I watched it.
What?
Turning up in that film.
Yes.
Yeah, it was really creepy. Was he didn't shout, that was he? He used to say that it's me again, or whatever. It was oh, God. Yeah, that was horrible.
Skip to the end, but then this builds up to a final kind of face-off between Martin and Alma.
Yeah.
And Zach and Olivia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As I said, having learnt that Zach and Olivia are still in cahoots and working together... Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the battle of the two couples, isn't it?
Yeah. Whereas Zach tries to knife Alma, and and then she gets a tent peg and the shove.
Alma has had enough of their shit. She's already wasted Dr. Wendell. Is that her name? Dr. Wendell? She had a go at her with one of those big like a big canister full of water. Boom boom, right in the face while she's Phantom of the Opera-ing it up. And just rams a tent peg right in his eye. Fantastic. Follows it up by healing it into his head. Beautiful.
Yeah, it's good. A real good, nice special effect on that one.
Yeah. And I think finally at that point, tipping over the edge and really realising that if you didn't do something really serious, these fuckers would just keep coming.
Mm-hmm.
So I was pleased that she finally thought, no, I'm not, I can't.
But at this point, the spores are closing in and closing in and closing in, and then they just have a massive... trip, don't they?
Yes. And again, that's the whole kind of psychedelic-y sound, lights, and all the rest of it. It's like something's happening in the cinema, really effective. I don't know how, because that's the only time I've seen it. Is in the cinema, but you guys will have to say.
It was okay. Yeah. There's some really nice visuals. There's some great bits with like roots and spores, and then with the smoke from the from flares going off and and
yeah, there was like stuff suspended in water, wasn't there, at one point? That was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good. And although that it just ends.
Well,
Dr. Wendell. Yeah, so on James.
Yeah, well, I was about to say the next morning, it's like dawn, the next day. And Olivia, Dr. Wendell, is kind of still alive, but it's just kind of like overcome with awe. It's like she's, you know, something has happened to her, hasn't it? Mm. But the other two are far away. They've gone. Well, when they come to, they are well away from the camp. And Alma, Park Ranger Alma, comes up to Martin and says, and her voice has changed with a distorted voice, and says, "I'll show you the way out of the woods."
Yeah.
Thus suggesting, has the magical entity now joined her?
Yeah, or has it, or has it given her the answer? Because one of the things that early on, they're saying, well, what will this thing tell us? And she said, well, it's going to tell us how to live alongside nature.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, is it the figurative woods or is it the
metaphorical
woods?
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's why I'm a big, big fan of a film with an ambiguous ending. I'm a bit always like that with the, well, what happens next and what does that mean?
This film also made me think a lot of Annihilation, James. I haven't watched Annihilation for a long time.
Yeah. I rewatched it the other day, weirdly. I still really enjoyed it. Yeah. So, as you can see, it is in many ways Annihilation, you know, there's the whole alien thing, but it is like a British cheaper version of it, even though Alex Garland's British, I know, and what have you. And for me, I think in summary, is I really enjoyed watching it at the time. And I remember thinking, oh, that lived up to the expectation. You know, that was good. But at the same time as well, I did think like, oh my God, if they had a better, as you said, maybe more, you know, like a bigger budget, i.e. more people being drawn into the woods, more of a finale than they did have.
Mm.
If it had a stronger last 25 minutes, I would have really, really loved it.
Yeah.
Whereas as it is, it was like, I enjoyed watching that. That was good. That ticks a lot of the boxes that we like.
Yes.
You know, some good folk horror stuff there, all the rest of it. But at the same time, I I've not felt the need to like, I've got to watch it again.
No.
Because it's pretty traumatic at times.
So my main, apart from speaking to you about it, James, my main experience of this is reading people slagging it off. I was going into it with trepidation because I find that, and I said to Beck, Ben Wheatley films, that either I love them or like, oh, that was impenetrable. Yeah, a similar kind of thing, that there's lots of elements in it which I felt like I wish they could go into a bit more, into a bit more depth. But just talking to you guys about it now, like, as always,
as
happens,
usual,
yeah, I've just added an extra point onto my score because when James just recounted her saying, "Let me take you out of the woods," I got all goose pimples, all the hair on the back of my neck went up. It's just, oh yeah, it was good, and it's I just love seeing Reese in films and stuff.
Yeah,
he was great. He was really good.
Definitely, I thought the cast were really good.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
it's that sort of like, there should be more films like this. There should be more kind of films done, sort of British films that touch on, you know, the uniqueness of this country. And this is what, you know, folk horror and what we've been banging on about on this podcast for quite a while now.
Mm.
You know, those stories are really rich and work really well. And it's like, and as I said, they don't have to be multi huge budgets. You can do really spooky stuff.
Yeah, just strobes.
Absolutely. By referencing the incredibly ancient things that we have in this country. Which I guess is kind of the point of the podcast, but some of the shots of the woods were so beautiful and atmospheric. I mean they've been done with great care. I thought it was really beautiful.
One of my favorite shots is when they was walking into the woods and obviously the clouds were moving fast above them, so the light was like almost like running across them because where the clouds were like blotting out the sun. It was just great. Loved it. I want to go back and watch A Field in England again to see if I can finally stay awake for it. Because I'm not saying, me falling asleep in a film is not the sign of a film being bad.
No, agreed.
Often I find that something about a particular film, 2001, Blade Runner films, I know they're great films and I do enjoy them, but it just does something to my brain where it just goes to go to sleep and it's just like, it's just like,
soporific.
Exactly. Mm. Right, let's give this scores out of 5 then. Kids.
All right, Dad.
I'm gonna give it a 3 because I just felt like some of the exposition was a bit clumsily done,
mm-hmm.
and looking back, knowing that it was a pandemic film, and there was it was a small crew and a small cast. I think they did really well with what they were able to do, but I felt like it needed a stronger ending for me. But three out of five. Who wants to go next?
Becca.
Thank you. I'm going to go 3.5, actually, because despite, like you said, me falling asleep was genuinely not a reflection of the film itself. I actually thought it was really good, but I thought James summed it up really well when he said it sort of fell down a bit at the end. And it wasn't a bad ending, and I'm totally with you on the ambiguity of it was excellent. I thought it was really sensitively handled, but maybe relied a little bit too much on the editing sequence of the kind of trippiness. That when that sort of finished, it was like, is the film done? Are we done? What did that mean? And there was a couple of sort of nods there at the very end to maybe what was happening next, but it did feel a tiny bit deflating. Given that it had ramped up and ramped up really, really well. It seems to be like a little bit missing. Even though, having said that, I thought it was beautiful and the performances were really good. I really enjoyed the general story. I really liked it.
And James, what are you
Brilliant.
Doing?
And then I'll be at the other end of that, and I'll say it's a 4 for me.
Okay, cool.
Because as I said, for me, if it had a bit more money and a better ending, so I said that final 20 minutes, it would have ticked all the right boxes for me. As you two both said brilliantly just then, you know, that whole thing of doing it on a budget in the time of the pandemic, all the rest of it, and touching on those that said, as we've just been saying, the fears that are very real as opposed to supernatural fears are way more terrifying for me. And that was the best film to do that I'd seen in a long time. And I just think, like, for example, you can imagine if they'd had more budget, along with more people have been drawn into the woods. Imagine if during like the psychedelic trip out scene, we see they run into people from throughout the history of these lands, as it were, you know, kind of like a sequence where people that have been drawn into the woods throughout the centuries and panic, feg, and all the rest of it. That would have been amazing, but they're doing it on a tight budget. But you know, that's just for me to make it like, well, that's, you've got to see this film. That's what it would have been. But it's totally worth watching. It's not a watch it again and again and again job by any means, because as I said, it's pretty intense in places. But it's definitely one that I think if you've got an interest in English horror, and if you like your folk horror, and I'm assuming that's one of the reasons why you're listening to this podcast, you definitely need to have a look at it at some point. If you can get it, because as Ross said, it's quite tough to get hold of at the moment.
And I'd be interested to see what other pandemic type stuff people actually want to relive. Because I think even though we said it's kind of, the pandemic's gone as a bit like a dream now, it is... Is this something which is quite close to us? And it's like, well, I don't. I read Tim Key's book about him in the pandemic, and it was kind of like a bit being stuck in lockdown, and it's quite good. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, people talk about lockdown. It's almost as boring as it was being locked down a little bit, because it. I feel like the build up to the pandemic, and again, this, we are talking about people who didn't have any. Really horrible happened to us, so apologies if anyone's listening to this and it was a lot more traumatic for you than us, but like the build up to it of like what happened was terrifying, and then it was almost like, oh, is this it? Okay, well, when is it going to end? And then it was just felt like a waiting thing. But anyway, that was interesting, thank you very much. Not what I just said was interesting, that wasn't very interesting. But the watching the film and talking to you guys about the film was interesting. I don't know if we would do any more Folk and House this year. Depends
if
John comes back. But we were meant to be watching Children of the Corn, but last year when we ended this, but James was like, I don't know if I really want
Listener, watch it. I was about to say, dear listener, I vetoed that. I just can't be arsed with it. There's just something about it. And often at the end of a school day, when I get home from work, it's like you want to watch something that you, as you guys, we talk about the thing of falling asleep watching films. Absolutely, I get that. And you think, oh, I want to watch something that I'm going to be really engaged in. And if it's just like, Oh, it's a Stephen King thing, and I'm vaguely aware that people have said that it's only ever okay.
Yeah.
I'm not really in the mood for
it. So have you got something you want to watch next, James, if we do another Folk and Now?
Sorry. I saw on the thing saying James's choice next. I'm like, Jesus, I don't know.
Okay.
I'll think on it
over
the next couple of days, but off the top of my head.
So if we do another Folk and Now this summer, which we probably will, it will be James's choice, but it will be a surprise choice.
It will be. I'll get thinking.
Well, thank you for joining us, wife Rebecca, and I will be joining you in a moment to brush our teeth. So until then, lovely to see you. Thank you for coming.
Okay, and thank you for listening, everyone. Yeah. And hopefully we'll be back. And thank you to Becca as well for coming in and classing the joint up.
Otherwise, us two being useless.
Yeah.
As always. And also, hopefully we'll have John back soon when he's finished his mega projects.
Yeah.
And we'll get this trainer rolling.
Okay. Until then, happy day.
Okay. Good stuff. Cheers, guys.
Bye.
You have been listening to the General Witchfinders present Folk in Hell, a spin-off podcast. Find more episodes of this and the main show wherever you get your podcasts. Visit generalwitchfinders.com for more details. Commune with us on Twitter at GeneralWitch1. And help support the show on Patreon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.